So imagine that you are a person that's had lots of good fortune running a department store called Boggs and Buell, a venerable Northside department store, served lots of people, and you want to do something great for the community. What happened 75 years ago, Buell Planetarium and Institute of Popular Science opened, and we're sitting in that building. If you remember Buell Planetarium as a child, we were right near where the miniature railroad village used to be. And I couldn't ask anybody to join us beyond the person who's across from me. Now, Glenn Walsh, you know just about everything there is to know about this building. And this has got to be a bit of an emotional and special day for you. I know you weren't here 75 yeah. years ago, but you know a lot about the building. Tell me more about its origins.
Okay, well, thank you for inviting me to sit in here and talk about the history of Buell Planetarium. I worked for Buell Planetarium for 10 years, so this is very very interesting for me. And also, I just want to mention in the beginning, I found a little bit of a coincidence with your history riddle this morning, because during the 1960s, 1970s, and the very early 1980s, a Picasso was hanging in the main hall of Buell Planetarium.
Wow, I had no idea.
Well, it wasn't actually the painting, it was a replica in stained glass.
Wow.
It was owned by PPG Industries as part of their Masterpieces in Glass exhibition. And it was backlit, and so it provided that whole exhibition provided a great deal of color to the main hall.
I'll be. What was it like from your research when this facility opened? It must have been just a magnificent day for the city of Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, the Buell Planetarium was one of only a very few museums in the city, so the opening a brand new museum, particularly in the middle of the Great Depression, was a very big deal. Gilbert Love, who was a well-known and longtime columnist for the Pittsburgh Press, he produced an 8-page Sunday newspaper supplement all about Buell Planetarium right before it opened.
Just about one particular building. That's amazing.
And on the dedication of the dedication was on the evening before the building opened to the public. Today, October 25th, is the 75th anniversary of when the building actually opened to the public. And actually, that anniversary will be at 11 o'clock this morning because it actually opened at 10 o'clock in the morning. But because they did not observe daylight saving time, it would be exactly 75 years to the moment at 11 o'clock this morning.
Wow.
And but the previous evening on October 24th was the grand dedication. And they had several major scientists from institutions such as Franklin Institute in Philadelphia, Hayden Planetarium in New York City, the secretary of the Amateur Astronomers Association of America was here, as well as astronomers from Perkins Observatory in the Columbus and Cleveland Observatory. And also the dedication ceremony was carried by three of the Pittsburgh's five radio stations at the time.
That's incredible to think of a time. I PNC Park opened, or Heinz Field opened, or even the Children's Museum opening got a lot of media attention. But when you think about this happening right as the Great Depression was more or less winding up in 1939, and also the building. Do you know how long it took to build the planetarium?
They started construction in 1937. First, they had to tear down the building that was already here, which was the Allegheny City Hall. The Allegheny City was a sort of a twin city to Pittsburgh up until 1907, when the Allegheny City was annexed to Pittsburgh, and that's kind of a sore spot in the and the sides of many North Siders, because they didn't want to merge with Pittsburgh, but politics being what it is, the General Assembly passed a special law allowing Pittsburgh to annex Allegheny City.
So the Allegheny City Hall was torn down,
right.
And room was made for this particular building. Now, some things I remember most, and by the way, if you would like to share any memories or ask any questions of Glenn, we're going to open our phones for only about the next 15 minutes. So 412 800-200-5975 is the way you can reach us, or 1-888-752-7234, 412-200-5975, or 1-888-SLB-RADIO. It's a special day. It's the 75th anniversary of the opening of Buell. Things I remember from my 1960s childhood were scales that you could step on and find out how much you would weigh on different planets.
Right.
I also remember and recently found a program from my junior high science fair that had my name in it and Buell's name on it, and this was the place where kids brought science fair projects to displayed here in the Pittsburgh area.
In fact, Pittsburgh has the oldest regional science fair in the country. There's only two, and it started right in the spring of 1940, right after Buell opened, and there's only two older science fairs, and they're statewide fairs. So Pittsburgh's the oldest regional science fair in the country.
Yeah, I want to say, do you know how old it is by any chance?
Well, the science fair?
Yeah.
Well, the same age, 75th.
75th.
Yes.
Because, let's see, I want to say mine was the 37th. That's probably about right, because if it was 38 years ago, that would have me at about 14 or 15. And I think that's what the booklet said that I found. It was really neat to see it.
Yeah, a friend and I entered the science fair as well. I think it was 1969. We didn't win anything, though.
No, I didn't. I did find a certificate. It was something like honorable mention, or it was the equivalent of a participation trophy type of thing, except the certificate. What I also remember is field trips and one or two evening social trips where into the planetarium you would go, suddenly the insect-like contraption would rise up from the floor.
And that was the very first planetarium ejector to be put on an elevator.
Yeah.
A special worm gear elevator, four huge worm gears. The elevator was custom built by Westinghouse.
Yeah, and that was the big planetarium projector made by a German company called Zeiss. Which the Zeiss name is still around in terms of optics for cameras. And that projector was really pretty special, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very special. It could show you the any place, it could show you the stars, and at any time, past, present, or future, any place on the Earth's surface.
How do you know? It's just kind of amazing. You wonder who came up with the idea of a planetarium, the notion of actually creating an artificial sky to simulate what you would see under different conditions. It's really kind of remarkable. It's like an original virtual reality.
Well, scientists at the Zeiss company, they were ones who came up with the idea of a projection planetarium. Originally, they were thinking about maybe just having a dome and painting on the stars on the top of the dome. But then somebody came up with the idea of actually projecting the stars on the dome, where you could actually change the stars from season to season.
And was at the time the Buell opened, were there many planetariums that were projection-based in the world?
Well, there were several in Europe, but the one in Pittsburgh was the fifth in the country. The first one in the country was the Adler Planetarium in Chicago. The second was Fellows Planetarium in Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. Third was the Griffith Observatory. They had a planetarium in Los Angeles. And the fourth was the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. When you talk about the Buell Planetarium, you have to talk about two people. We've already mentioned Henry Buell Jr. He owned the Boggs and Buell department store, which catered to the wealthy industrialists of the era, many of them who lived just a few blocks away on Ridge Avenue. And some of those mansions on Ridge Avenue today are still being used as part of the main campus of Community College of Allegheny County.
Oh, I didn't know that. Those are beautiful homes. We have a caller from Portland, Oregon, to talk to you. And I hope you'll consider calling us, too, 888-752-7234. Boyd, Glenn Walsh is here with you. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to hear from you.
Actually in Wolf Creek.
Oh, Wolf Portland. Creek. Did I say Portland? I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
I know Portland's you're in Wolf Creek.
Town.
Yeah.
I wanted to recall, as a child, not only the star display, which definitely expanded my cosmology, but also the pendulum. And it's very difficult to explain why, but the pendulum gave me a sense, for the first time, I think, of my standing on a rotating Earth.
Well, you'll be happy to know the pendulum is one of the few things that still remains at the original Beale Planetarium building. And it is a demonstration that the Earth rotates on its axis.
Yeah, this is, it's the Foucault pendulum?
Foucault.
And you might remember this as a child if you've been here, is there is a circle of little pins, almost like little miniature bowling pins, except they're perfectly cylindrical. And the pendulum is swinging back and forth, and over a period, I forget what the periodicity is. It's a little more than a day,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's a little more than a day, right.
But the pins eventually will all be knocked down,
right.
Because the pendulum's, the arc slowly changes directions throughout the day.
The pendulum actually never changes direction. It's the Earth.
Or the Earth, yeah.
It moves. and whenever the Earth moves the pins into the swing of the pendulum.
I'm laughing because you're exactly right. It's hard to get that perspective. And,
exactly.
Astronomy and planetary science is one of my Achilles' heels. I mean, I appreciate it, but I always have trouble. And Ricky is a minor in astronomy, so she helps me with those things. That's a good thing. And, you know, Boyd, kids still, you know, circle around that pendulum and watch and watch and watch and wait for, you know, a pin to fall. And it's kind of neat to watch the patient waiting as that happens.
It's a wonderful example of how to explain something without words.
Mm-hmm. Also, some other artifacts that are here, the planetarium dome itself, that original screen, is still there. I was surprised that it is perforated. There are little holes in it. I always figured it was vinyl or some solid material, but I actually had a chance to go up there.
It would be an echo chamber if that was like that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And also, the holes allowed us to put objects behind the dome and backlight them. And we did that from time to time.
What kind of things would you put there?
Well, during the Star of Bethlehem Christmas show, we had a manger scene in behind the dome, and we would backlight it.
Neat. I never would have thought of that at all, doing that kind of thing. By the way, if you want to call us, 412-200-5975, 412-200-5975. It's great to have Glenn Walsh here with us.
Yeah, another gentleman that's important to the history of Beale Planetarium is named Leo Scanlon. He was a plumber who lived on the north side, but he was also a very avid amateur astronomer. And his claim to fame is that he did something in 1930 that no one else had ever done. Up until that point, domes of astronomical observatories were always made of steel because they thought steel was the only thing strong enough to hold up an astronomical dome. Well, in 1930, he constructed an observatory in his backyard in the Summerhill section of the north side, and he made his dome completely of aluminum. And in fact, there's a photograph of him sitting on top of the dome to show how strong it was. Well, from that point on, completely changed the way amateur astronomical observatories are constructed from then on.
Wow, that I never knew. Boyd, thank you for your call, by the way.
Leo Scanlon, in 1929, he co-founded the Amateur Astronomers Association of Pittsburgh. In 1930, when Adler Planetarium opened in Chicago, he and some club members took a road trip to Chicago and saw the new planetarium. They were so impressed, they came back to Pittsburgh and started lobbying immediately for a planetarium to be built in Pittsburgh. And in 1935, the Buell Foundation agreed to build a planetarium in memory of Henry Buell, Jr.
And the Buell Foundation continues today. It's a great organization committed to our community and particularly increasingly so to the north side. One thing I wanted to mention is we've talked about looking at a virtual sky, but Beale Planetarium also had a rather unique way of allowing students as well as scientists to look up at the real sky. And yes, this was a very unusual telescope.
Yes, we have the Astronomical Observatory actually did not open until 2 years after the building opened in 1941. It was a very unique type of telescope. In fact, it still exists. Unfortunately, it's dismantled and in storage right now. But it's a 10-inch refractor telescope, a very unique refractor called a siderostat-type refractor. It is mounted on two concrete piers. The telescope by itself does not move. The eyepiece of the telescope actually goes through a hole in the wall so that people can look through the telescope, staying completely in a heated observing room while the telescope stays out in the cold air. Since the telescope does not move, we have a mirror behind the telescope that reflects the sky into the telescope. And so that does limit a little bit of how much sky you can see, but still, for the southern, it does aim at the southern sky, so you can see most of the planets, the moon, and the stars that people are interested in. So it's a very interesting telescope. As I said, it did not open until 1941. However, they did have a small telescope, 4-inch refractor, that they bought from the Zeiss company at the same time they bought the planetarium projector. And that came the same time, so they would have at least a small telescope to show people the stars until the main observatory was finished. Unfortunately, that 4-inch Zeiss refractor telescope, well, the Zeiss company sent us the wrong telescope. they sent us a terrestrial refractor telescope instead of an astronomical refractor. See, a terrestrial refractor has additional lenses in it to make the objects right side up. Scientists don't really need objects to be right side up, but when you're looking at a planet, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But when you add extra optics, it further degrades the image. And so that's not very good for scientific research.
Interesting.
And so these Buell officials, when they learned, they were very disappointed when they learned they had the wrong telescope, and they wanted to send it back and get a replacement. But it was autumn of 1939. Adolf Hitler had just invaded Poland, and World War II had begun, and there's no way they could have replaced that telescope. Even if they sent it back, they wouldn't have gotten replacement, and they probably wouldn't have gotten a refund either. And so they learned to make do with the terrestrial refractor telescope. And today, that telescope that continues to be used at the Carnegie Science Center's Henry Buell Jr. Planetarium and Observatory, owned by the city of Pittsburgh. And it's a very unique telescope with an interesting history.
Now, a couple other artifacts that remain. And by the way, 1-888-752-7234 or 412-200-5975 is how to reach us. Glenn Walsh is here. And we're celebrating the 75th anniversary in just about 2 hours. It'll be exactly 75 years since Buell Planetarium and Institute of Popular Science opened to the public. Another artifact here at the museum, I'm looking at roughly 40 seats.
Yes.
They're red Naga hide seats that if you've been to our studios, you've seen them right outside. I believe these were these seats?
Yes, those were the original seating seats from the Little Science Theater.
Yes.
250-seat lecture hall. That's one of the few things they did save from my suggestion for the Children's Museum.
Well, and those seats were refurbished, and I'm trying to remember some of the happenings in the Little Science.
Well, one of the big things was the Transparer of the Talking Glass Lady. We had a plastic lady. They called it Transparer the Talking Glass Lady. Actually, she was made of cast plastic. But they showed that it was transparent, and you could see her bones and major organs.
Huh.
And there would be about a 15-minute demonstration of explaining about the anatomy of the human body.
I vaguely remember that. Now, the Little Science Theater was right outside where we are, right?
No, the Little Science Theater was upstairs on the first floor. It was where they now have an exhibit. It was just to the west of the Planetarium Theater.
Okay.
They turned that into exhibit into an exhibit gallery now.
Yeah, I remember where that is now. The other thing, I don't know if I've told you the story or not, but here we are, and I hope I can paint this picture for you as you're listening. We're in a radio studio within this planetarium, and we're at the lower level of a building that just is really built. I mean, the cross-section concrete, you know, at least 8 inches, probably thicker in some places.
Also, this was the very first building in the city and possibly the state built with air conditioning.
Wow. And also, you know, it's just a solid building. So we're building the studio. And
let me say a publicly owned building. I should emphasize this, publicly owned building.
I'm pretty insistent that we don't want a raised floor. A lot of studios have raised false floating floors, and wiring is put underneath it, and that's the way you keep a floor acoustically isolated from beyond the studio, so vibrations of feet outside of the studio do not transmit inside of the studio. But I didn't want a raised floor because it would create a tripping hazard and would cause the need for a ramp, and I didn't want people to feel awkward as if they needed to use a ramp to come into the studio. I wanted to make it as accessible as possible. So we thought and decided to make a very expensive and deep saw cut around the perimeter of the studio and fill it with a latex compound to basically insulate this floor. And the day we thought of doing it, we walked about 40 feet in front of me to the large building in front of me, and we saw a 18-inch by 18-inch square where the exact same thing had been done. And there was a little plaque, and it was a seismograph. And I don't know if you knew about that.
No,
or
I
not,
didn't know about
but
that.
But it was just right behind you, we laughed because we thought we were so innovative and clever coming up with this way to isolate the floor. And here people had probably done it 50 years before we did. The seismograph wasn't there, but there was a little metallic plate indicating that it used to be there.
And you'll have to show me that sometime.
Yeah, it was a neat I think you can still see the – I don't think it's carpeted. I think you can still see where it was, but – you know, that kind of burst our bubble a little bit, although it did tell us we were on the right track, too. Yeah. Glenn, we just have about a minute, and I knew this was going to go very quickly. A text came in. Wendy from Dayton, Pennsylvania, says, thank you for a fascinating guest. I homeschooled Dylan and have now decided to introduce more astronomy into my curriculum as a result of listening. So that's a nice thank you, Wendy.
That's great.
For letting us know that. I know it's a special day.
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
No, thank you for inviting me.
And anything else you wanted to add?
Unless you have any other questions.
We could just keep going and going.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much more history I could tell you.
But, we'll do it again sometime.
Great.
And
also, if any astronomy questions you have sometime, let me know.
Well, yeah, and let's do talk about, as we close, that there's a great website where people can learn about the planetarium and also astronomy.
Yes, www.planetarium.cc. www.planetarium.cc. That's a huge website on the history of your planetarium.
Excellent. Thanks, Glenn Walsh, here at the Saturday Light Brigade. Happy 75th anniversary to Buell Planetarium and Institute of Popular Science.